Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Rowe. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This is your Friday follow-up for Season 9, Episode 11, where we work through some of the more fantastical theories surrounding the 1963 assassination of President John F. Kennedy. I was joined on the main episode by the host of the Crime Countdown podcast, Ash and Elena. While I think the conversation was interesting and even fun, it was most definitely, let's just say, not the most informative look at the case in general. But because of that, and as promised, today's follow-up is going to be a little different. A few days after we recorded the episode that you heard on Sunday, Zach and I did another episode on the Kennedy assassination for our other podcast, Bob and Weave. This was not our plan, but the episode was so in-depth and so informative that we decided to also publish the interview here on Truth and Justice as a follow-up to the Theories episode. And since this episode is recorded for Bob and Weave, there's also a video version if you'd like to watch rather than listen. All you gotta do is go to the Truth and Justice YouTube channel and check it out. Now, after a short break, here's myself, Zach, history teacher Tom Dessenberg, and Zach's grandfather Doug Bonham dissecting the case of the assassination of JFK.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bob and Weave. Today we have this first time, I think, ever, we have multiple guests in the studio on microphone.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. This is going to be a fun episode.
Yeah. For those of you watching on YouTube and the wide angle, we were unable to capture one of our guests, Mr. Doug Bonham, who you can see in this camera. This is Zach's grandfather.
So, yeah, this is my grandfather, Doug Bonham. He is here because, honestly, I've had a lifelong interest in JFK. I mean, I can remember being little and talking about JFK.
Also, today's episode is about the JFK assassination. Go ahead.
Now that all our listeners know. We're talking about the JFK.
Anyway, proceed.
But I've had a lifelong interest for JFK based solely on my grandfather. I mean, right. Being around him, he was always a big JFK, books everywhere. I remember at one point, I mean, I don't want to get too far because we're going to talk about a lot of this, but I mean, we talked about JFK, you know, on multiple occasions, probably weekly growing up.
Right.
So
he's our number one, maybe number two. I hate to put a level on it. JFK expert. And our other guest today is returning guests. My friend I went to high school with, Mr. Tom Dessenberg.
Thanks for having me on.
And Tom was in high school. You were always the history buff. You would always throw useless trivia history knowledge at us while we were sitting around a campfire drinking beer.
Yeah. Well, you got to be good at something.
Right. And,
you know, I was moderately good at athletics, terrible at math. So remembering useless history knowledge, that's my superpower.
That's your superpower. Yep. And you turned that into your career because now you are a history teacher.
Yep. High school history teacher.
You know, the other thing that's cool about this, and this is a little different, mm-hmm. is the three of us have not lived through this.
Right.
Where Doug has lived through this too. So not only does he have the knowledge, I mean, he lived through it.
Right. We only lived through the documentaries.
Yes.
You also notice, so as I started saying on our, for those of you on YouTube, our wide angle doesn't quite capture Doug because Doug being also one of the people in the room that are, what's the right word?
Paranoid is the right word.
But vulnerable, I was going to say. Right? But yeah, given the, you know, if you're watching this in the year 2026, back about 6 years ago, there was this pandemic.
Yeah.
And there was definitely a concern for anyone over a certain age. And they told us that we're safe if we're 6 feet apart. So we have arranged Doug. So he is.
And I'm way over the age. So.
Right. So. First, Doug, tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background, and why are you our JFK expert, one of?
Well, my interest in the JFK assassination, of course, I lived through it. I mean, I was in a that Friday afternoon, I was in a clothing inspection line at Keesler Air Force Base in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I didn't develop an immediate interest in it then. I felt initially that it's probably a conspiracy because of Oswald's Russia connections and so mm-hmm. forth. Then Ruby killing Oswald, you know, obviously he's silencing Oswald and so forth. Mm-hmm. But then the Warren Commission came out and explained everything, and I kind of believed the Warren Commission. Then one day I was in Dallas, doing an educational show there, and walked over to Dealey Plaza. And at the time, you could nobody objected if you walked into the Texas School Book Depository. Went up either the sixth floor where the shots came from, or it might have been the seventh, but the view out the window is the same. Mm-hmm. Anyway, saw a car go by. In fact, I saw many cars go by. One of them was a convertible, had four people in it, two in the front, two in the back. And I realized that from that angle, there's no way that a bullet could go through the person in the back and hit the passenger on the driver's side in the front. And mm-hmm. I started questioning this, or didn't question. I just assumed the single bullet theory was wrong. So I started reading the books on the assassination, and there must be 100 of them or more. I've not read them all, but I read a dozen or so, or several dozen, I'm sure. Almost all of them believe that there was a conspiracy involved, and they fall into several categories. Some Oswald wasn't involved at all. Some of them were. Oswald was involved. Oswald did the shooting, but was part of a conspiracy and so on and so forth. Then I started, went back to Dallas several times after that, retraced some of the footsteps that Oswald did, bought a Mannlicher Carcano rifle, still have it, to see if you could, in fact, get off three shots in the time allowed. And, yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. Found out that the limousine that Kennedy and Connally were in, Connally was not in the front seat. He was in what you call a jump seat and was several inches to the left of Kennedy. So suddenly the single shot theory made sense. And it, gradually, one by one, I kind of eliminated the various conspiracy theories and guess what? Eventually ended up thinking, yeah, Oswald was this lone killer, lone assassin, and Ruby was the lone assassin of Oswald. And that's kind of where I am today.
That's interesting. And is that the actual, the the physics of the shot of the assassination. So I always hear three shots, but we always see in like the Zapruder film, you see what appears to be two shots. You see Kennedy go for his neck when it looks like he, or her throat look when he was hit in the neck, and then the fatal kill shot. Where was the third shot?
The I think the consensus is that the third shot, remarkably, was when the limousine was closest, and he missed the entire limousine. He did not hit. He didn't hit the anyone in the limousine, and he didn't hit the limousine either. So how he missed that first shot is maybe he was nervous. I don't know. And probably the first shot did get somebody. There's a man by the name of Teague, which was a couple of blocks away. And suddenly he felt a stinging on his cheek and was hit by a piece of, apparently hit by a piece of the bullet or possibly the concrete that the bullet kicked up.
Really? So was the third shot based on everyone heard three shots? Why do we think
I think the consensus is that they heard three shots. Three empty holes were found on the sixth floor of the depository. Now, remarkably, another investigation called the House Committee. What was it called, Tom?
I think the House Committee on Assassinations.
Yeah, I think so. And they come up with a fourth shot.
Now, most of my knowledge comes from this fabulous movie with Kevin Costner, where they explain how everything you're saying is bullshit, first of all.
I will tell you that I repeat that line at work probably three times
back
a week.
Back and to the left.
Back and to the left. And no one knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. I say it all the time. Back and to the left. And no one has any idea what I'm talking about.
The best thing that came out of that was the Seinfeld episode.
Right.
Yes, yeah. The second spitter on the grassy knoll. Other than that, the whole movie JFK, you know, Oliver Stone's done much better work.
Was any of it based in fact? So what I was getting at was that they talked about a shot that missed and hit like the overpass. Was there any evidence to support that, or was that just complete Hollywood nonsense made up?
I've never seen anything that supports that. The
goddamn Oliver Stone.
There are theories that the first shot, the closest shot that missed, that it skipped off either, I'm trying to remember, a traffic light, I believe, and then hit the curb and then caused some kind of wound on that, on Teague, that came up and hit his, and it was spent by then, so it didn't do any real damage.
Right.
But that was probably that was the first shot.
Okay.
And there's the longest gap is between the first shot and the second shot.
Uh-huh.
The second shot and third shot happen in rapid succession. So Oswald probably, you know, collected himself, got back on target, and then shot the next shot and then the fatal headshot.
Right, just kept
and remember, he's shooting with a $14 rifle, so. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah.
But, you know, this is one of the things is that people beat up the Carcano, that it's a bad it's not bad. You know, it's not a Winchester Model 70. It's not a Remington, you know, 40X.
Now, this is something that do you have one?
I don't.
That actually surprised me because you're also an avid gun collector.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have one if anyone wants it. I've never fired it. And if you're brave enough to fire it, that would be wonderful. But I did work the bolt to see, is it possible to work the bolt, aim and so forth in the time available. I forget what the exact time is, but it was clearly possible do that.
I can remember being younger. I remember this vividly, is going into his bedroom. He had pulled the gun down and laid it on the bed, and he had told me to pick it up, pretend to fire it, cycle it. You know, we talked about it. I mean, I vividly remember him doing that, having the gun, having, you know, I was maybe 11, 12 years old going through it. I mean, I
this was before he became an expert, the expert that he is today. But even then, he could work it close enough, enough to.
I've cycled, like I've seen him at gun shops, and I've kind of cycled the action on him. I mean, it's not a hunting rifle, but it's not as clunky as like a Mosin Nagant.
Is it a short action or is it a longer action on the left?
It's an intermediate.
Yeah.
So it's shorter than 30-06. It's actually a little bit shorter than. I went all the way through my collection of ammo. I do not have 6.5 ammo. The closest I have and it just looks like it is a 7mm Mauser.
Okay.
So it's actually shorter than the 7mm Mauser. Here's a surplus .6 kind of for reference.
So it is a little bit short. This is very similar to the 6.5 Creedmoor round.
Yeah.
And it's also very similar to that one's more similar than the .30-06.
Yeah.
It looked a lot like that.
Yeah. The reason I brought this is because of the bullet shape. You hear a lot of talk about the magic bullet. Are we going to get to that later, or you want to go now?
Go for it.
Okay.
Wait, real quick before we do that. Doug, what is your background? What did you do for a living?
Most of my career was spent developing educational courses and products for a number of companies, Heath Company being the longest, Heath Kit. Before then, worked downrange during the early days of the Gemini program for NASA. Worked for Billy Graham for a while at a radio station, WMIT-FM, down in the mountains of North Carolina. That's pretty much it, I think.
Well educated and comfortable behind a microphone.
Well, yes, I wouldn't say well educated, but I'm fairly comfortable behind a mic.
I'm fairly comfortable that you are smarter than at least me or Zach.
Easily. Now you talked about that radio station. Wasn't the claim to fame on that radio station that the tower was the highest peak east of the Mississippi or something?
The claim was that the top of our tower, first off, the radio station was located on top of Clingman's Peak at Mount Mitchell, North Carolina. Mount Mitchell is the highest point, is the highest natural mountain in the east of the Mississippi. The top of our antenna was claimed to be the highest point east of the Mississippi River. Can't verify that, but that was the claim.
That's a good claim to
fame,
though.
Now, that's a conspiracy.
And if Billy Graham claims it, it's good enough for me.
Okay, so, and Tom, but the audience familiar with you from last year, history teacher, yada, yada. So, I almost said yada yada, which was another callback to Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So the magic, I definitely want to hear you talk about the forensics or whatever you're going to tell us about the magic bullet theory. And then I want to jump back with that to what you said about where Connolly was sitting.
Yeah. People like, bullets don't act like that. Bullets don't do that.
What is that? Explain first what they're saying happened with the bullet.
So the bullet passes through Kennedy's neck.
From behind.
From behind. That it hits Connolly on his back, exits through his chest right below his nipple, and ends up breaking his arm and wrist. So it's a pretty spectacular bullet path.
Wasn't there something in his leg, too?
Maybe fragments, because he was sitting hands kind of right above his knee.
Right.
I always remember a cowboy hat.
Well, in the great documentary JFK by Oliver Stone, they showed the bullet went through his neck, through the seat, through Connolly's shoulder, through his wrist, and then I thought the bullet came to rest in his thigh.
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they find it on the gurney.
Exactly. That he was wheeled in on at the hospital.
Yeah. Right.
And people are like, oh, it's a pristine bullet. No bullet could have done that. The bullet did exactly what it was designed to do. It was a full metal jacket. This is similar in shape.
Uh-huh.
This actually has a soft tip on it, though, because it's a hunting ammo. And it very long, 160 grains, and a round point, and it did exactly what it's supposed to do. It penetrated and just kept going.
Right.
The 6.5mm have a long history in Europe.
Uh-huh.
So the first one is the Greek. Manlooker, there's the Italian Tarcano, there's the 6.5 Swede, there are hunting cartridges, 6.5 by 57 in Germany, and the 256 Manlooker from Austria. The famed elephant hunter, Walter Karamojo Bell, he actually shot elephants with a 6.5 Manlooker using full metal jacket, 160 grain ammo.
So it's reasonable to assume that bullet would maintain... And what we're getting, so like what he said, this is a soft tip, is a hunting round.
It will expand.
You have a soft tip, so you want it to, upon impact, to expand
and deliver all of its energy inside a rather small target.
Right.
So like a deer.
Right.
Whereas the full metal jacket that, you know, Kennedy was shot with is just going to keep going and not expand and keep going and not expand.
Right.
So,
and won't they tumble? Are they one of the rounds that they say will tumble?
No. This one, in some cases they can tumble. This one they don't believe did.
Okay.
There is a theory about that it tumbled on Connolly because of the length of the scar he had on his back.
Uh-huh.
Well, they had to open it up.
Right.
To perform surgery, and that lengthened the scar. And there is a little bit of oval shaping on the scar because it hit
at an angle,
you know, coming down and over.
So the bullet can maintain its integrity,
mm-hmm.
but what I got into, and I just know from Zach telling me that you have some thoughts on this. The reason it's called, you know, the magic bullet theory is because it appears that the bullet didn't travel in a straight line.
Yes. So it's referred to both as a pristine bullet and the magic bullet.
Uh-huh.
And then when you get to it's not a direct line seat, it's a jump seat. And Nova on PBS did a wonderful episode back in the 90s where they lined it up computer module.
Uh-huh.
And they had Connolly turning. You know, Connolly looked back into his right, and he knew what the gunshot was. He was a combat veteran.
Uh-huh.
So before this, though, right, the theory is that the bullet took an abrupt turn.
Yeah, and you see diagrams where it's making, you know, a ridiculous 90 degree.
It's through Kennedy's neck, through the seat, through Connolly's back, out, yeah. Through. You said that's right, the way I remember it is that it went through both bones in his right wrist, but then ends up in his left leg.
Yep.
And that's where it was like, and, you know, and then it makes a 90-degree turn to come to rest in his leg.
Yeah. What the conspiracy theorists never mention is that, okay, let's say it, that it wasn't, that it wasn't a single bullet. Well, what happened to the bullet after it hit Kennedy's neck, after he went through Kennedy's neck? It was never found, and believe me, they went over, no car in history has ever been gone over with the way this limo was,
mm-hmm.
and the shell, or the cartridge was never found. The bullet was never found. So what happened to the bullet if it didn't?
That's some logic that takes a lot of the fun out of this. Never occurred to me what the hell happened to the bullet.
And the bullet, you know, and they say, oh, it was a pristine. It was planted.
Uh-huh.
If you take a look at the photos you can find from the National Archive, the base jacket is
deformed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's a large nick that is visible in the front of the bullet. So the bullet did take damage. It lost weight. There were some fragments that were lost in Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, that's more or less what the bullet was designed to do, not to expand, to keep going.
Right.
I brought along Craig Boddington's book, Safari Rifles. And he has a whole chapter about 6.5, or a whole section of a chapter about 6.5. You know, and those and the really long 7mm,
mm-hmm.
They were referred to as flying drills. They just kept going.
Right.
So I like Craig Boddington. If you're not familiar, he's a firearms author,
mm-hmm.
a brigadier general in the Marine Corps Reserve. He's pretty noted. You know, he's written a lot of books. He writes for a lot of the hunting and gun magazines, traveled the world, hunted. So he has a little bit of experience there.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about a bolt that's going to continue through. Now, this is where I have a little bit, because Zach clued me into some of the positioning. But that was just my brain. I should have got it up on the screen. But the Zapruder film I was just watching, the timing seems a little bit weird. But Doug, can you explain how a single bullet could make all those wounds based on the positioning in the car?
The Nova program that Tom referred to did a computer simulation, and they line up perfectly with the Zapruder film. Mm-hmm. Connolly, apparently, when he first heard the first bullet, he started to turn and look back. He knew what it was.
Uh-huh.
And then the second bullet, a couple of seconds later, he was hit and showed signs of being hit. But to me, there's no mystery involved now. I mean, it lines up perfectly.
Because he's not sitting.
That's he's exactly. not sitting directly in front of JFK. He's sitting. He's sitting slightly to the left of JFK, and he's also turned so that his right side is more in line with the bullet.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of people don't know about that particular vehicle is it's not a standard.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there,
prior to you telling me that, I always thought that somebody was just sitting in a front seat directly in front of it.
Yeah, and it's not a standard. And not only that, but the back seat is actually lifted. Yeah.
Right.
To allow him to be out further.
And if you look at Kennedy, you know, Kennedy is riding right on the door, arm over outside the door. Just what your parents told you not to do when you were little.
Right.
But what all freeborn Americans do when it's nice weather. You got to get your arm outside the window.
Right.
So, that exaggerated the discrepancy of where Connolly was sitting and where Kennedy was sitting.
Right. So we take Kennedy's a little further to the right. Connolly's a little further to the left. Kennedy's higher than Connolly and Connolly's turning. But the turning is what gets me. When I watched the Zapruder film, it looks to me like the timing of it is you see Kennedy reach for his neck.
Mm-hmm.
So the shot's made impact. And it looks to me that it's after that that Connolly makes the turn back to the right.
That's not. I don't recall that from the Nova episode. And what the
maybe they're just like Oliver Stone. They
it could be. Yeah. The Connolly's head was actually say get away from the microphone. There was actually significantly to the left, and that's what the medical examiners determined mm-hmm. by the pitch of his body. So even back then, and this is in the Warren report,
right?
That you know that he had moved that he had looked to his right, back to Kennedy. And this presumably the first shot that missed, you know
right.
what it was. And then the second shot that hits Kennedy and then him, he's looking almost towards the driver, which would have been in front of him.
Okay. So the other big piece of it, obviously, is the back and to the left, the fatal kill shot. While we started, Zach, can you pop out of my desk and grab my laptop real quick?
Got it. Keep going.
I had planned to, but you were rushing us. You passive aggressively stepped into the studio at 9:58. As though we weren't allowed to set out and bullshit anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think this is going to help because we actually have somebody from NASA. You know, this is the jet effect. That bullet exiting the brain is pushing back, you know. So it's exiting out the front. It's pushing back.
See,
And had the bullet came from the grassy knoll, the wound would have been. It wouldn't have been in the back of the head, where the fatal bullet entered. It would have been in the side of the head, unless Kennedy was like this, and the film doesn't indicate that he was.
Right.
And then the other thing about the bullet coming from the grassy knoll is Connolly's not in the crossfire, but Mrs. Connolly or Mrs. Kennedy would be. And then you're looking at you know the collateral shot hitting one of them, probably Jackie.
Right.
And the bullet that kills the fatal wound on the head, they do find two 30-plus grain fragments of that in the front seat, lead residue all over the windshield, and at least one chip in the windshield. So that
from all the shrapnel going from back to forward.
Yeah. So that bullet, you know, broke apart, and two pieces came to rest in the front seat. And significant amount of lead residue all over the inside of the windshield.
What I like about right now is you guys are absolutely destroying all Bob's hopes and dreams right now of a conspiracy. Bob came in hot that it was a conspiracy, and you guys have just dismantled him.
But I mean, who doesn't love a good conspiracy
theory? I wear a tinfoil hat all the time. I feel like
And the thing about the Kennedy is like Kennedy's it's the gateway conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start with Kennedy, you end up with the earth is flat and birds aren't real and vapor trails. So
can either of you give us like a quick overview of a couple of the conspiracies that kind of built off of this?
Or I'm not done talking about this bullet.
We can go back to that one and find what you're looking for.
Well, I think some of the more ridiculous ones, one was the second Oswald. One was Oswald was replaced when he was in the service in Japan. Don't know what happened to the real Oswald, but he was an imposter was put in his place, and he became Oswald. He's the one who went off to Russia, married, came back to the States. And even his family, he looked so much like the original Oswald. Even his family, his mother and his brother, didn't recognize him. Yeah. Another one was David Lipton's best evidence. He says that the JFK body was swapped for another body that looked like him on the way back from Dallas before the autopsy. I mean, there's some really crazy stuff out there. Mm-hmm. The Jim Garrison thing of the JFK film, I don't think any of the conspirators, at least the ones I talked to, give any credit at all. In fact, Jim Garrison really destroyed a lot of people's faith by the ridiculous theories that he came up with, the killers escaped through the sewers of Dallas. And
can we not hit the elephant in the room? the umbrella man. Hello,
the umbrella. What's
There's
the umbrella
clearly
man?
A man telling them to start shooting by opening and closing his umbrella.
I don't know that I've heard that one.
He was trying to make some kind of political statement. They interviewed him with the Warren Commission.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Now, he could have been lying to the Warren Commission to keep your hopes up. Right. But
he clearly didn't assassinate the president because he said he didn't.
Yeah. I believe his name is Cutler. Mm-hmm. And he, because of the Kennedy influence in England, where very rainy all the time and so right. forth. Somehow it was an insult to the Kennedy family by raising the umbrella,
yeah.
or so he said. Yeah.
Didn't it have to do with like Neville Chamberlain carrying
an
umbrella?
I think so. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
so he says.
That's so past anything I know about.
But so it's he's across the street. I don't know if you see it in this, but he's right before the shots start firing. There's a man in this beautiful sunny day that like opens an umbrella, and I think he opens it, closes it, opens it, something like really weirdly mm-hmm. right before the shots start firing.
Yeah, that's one I didn't even know that one.
Yeah. I heard a theory. So on Truth and Justice for the episode that's going to drop on the 22nd, I had kind of a fun group, couple ladies that host a podcast called Crime Countdown, and they just kind of chat about all these top 10 lists. And so we went through some Kennedy assassination theories, and one of them was that the umbrella man, Cutler, actually had a poison dart in the umbrella.
Well, the KGB developed an umbrella, and they killed a defector with it in London.
Oh, that's correct.
And yeah. it had a hypodermic in the end that stuck him with poison and yeah. killed him. So if he could have gotten close enough to stick.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to go through this. Can you see that, Doug, over there over your shoulder? And this isn't slowed down. I think it slows it down. But what I'm looking at,
Kennedy comes into view at frame 210, I believe it was, of the Zapruder film. The Zapruder film is going at 18 frames per second, I believe.
Right. So
you're seeing it at 1/18th of a second.
Right.
As the frames progress.
So right there, Kennedy's already grabbing
obviously
his neck.
Obviously, he's been hit, yes.
And that's where Connolly, that sign kind of messes it up. I don't remember back it up, but I wish they had it in like a slow motion. But
yeah, you can't see him when he's behind the sign.
Right. I'm trying to see if Connolly is already turned. So he's hit. And so in theory, right here, Kennedy and Connolly are hit.
Correct.
And Connolly has been hit at this moment. He's already been hit through his back. His out his chest, his wrist, and into his leg.
That's the single bullet theory.
Right. But then when I see his reaction following here, he looks back at Kennedy. It seems odd to me that, and then there was the fatal shot. It just seemed, his reaction to that seems, he doesn't look shot to me. Does anybody else feel that way? Like he looks back when he hears the shot, and then he looks forward. You never see him like, grab his chest, grab his leg, grab anything like that.
He yelled something out, according to witnesses, but also think that he's turning that way. He's looking to his wife, and he's looking back to Mrs. Kennedy and JFK.
Right.
So
I've also seen blow-ups of that, and you can see his jaws puff out at one point, and they think that's when he was hit.
That's through one more time as it goes through. Hit, so he looks back. He's sitting up tall. Turns, and then boom, there's the last shot. And after the last shot, Connolly hits the deck.
Well, you know, there's, I mean, Can't say I've ever been shot before, but there's a theory that a lot of people talk about that you don't realize it. You know what I mean? Like when right. you're hit at first, you don't realize it, that it's, you know, it's a hot sting that you're like, whoa, what happened? Oh, yeah. No, I've been shot.
I would almost feel like that would have to be the, I mean, everything you guys are makes sense, but I would almost feel like it would have to be that. I just can't, I mean, it's not even just like a pass. I mean, he gets hit like boom, boom, boom. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the bullet just ravaged his body and he's just like, what's going on back here? Like it's hard to believe that he had that reaction to it without even hunching over, grabbing his chest, because you know where did it come in and out? I know it went in,
it
went right. I mean, chest right under his nipple. It came out.
Yeah, it came out right under his nipple, entered his shoulder a little bit above it.
Yeah. So did it pierce lung?
I believe it did. It was a sucking chest wound, if I remember the description.
Yeah. So it went through one lung, shattered in the shattering of the wrist, because it broke his radius and his ulna, right?
Yeah, and the ulna is one of the thickest bones in the body.
Right. Yeah, so to me, like, I feel like you noticed that.
Or densest bone, I should say.
Right, yeah. And that was his right wrist, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I want to see what he's doing with his hand.
He's holding his Stetson.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so what is he doing with his hand after both his bones? So he's hit there, his right hand is smashed.
And he's holding his white Stetson.
Yeah.
Bob is determined to solve this right here.
Yeah. I've seen it. So my thing is, like, everything I've seen and heard people talk about the case about certain things, and it's like, oh, that makes total sense. But then I'll watch the video and be like, well, no, it doesn't really make sense to me.
The Nova computer animation,
it
makes sense.
They explain.
Yeah. And one of the big things they did with the
Nova. How do we know they're not part of the conspiracy, Tom?
That's right.
If you can't trust PBS, I mean, come on. Big Bird would never stand for.
That's the other thing. A lot of the conspiracy theories, and you're going to get a lot of emails. I don't want to read them when it's over.
Right, right. Well, so we're going to forward all of them to you.
Yeah. But what was I going to say? I forget what I was going to say. I'm old. So,
so the theories of the shooters, there's Oswald in the book's depository. There's the possibility of the Grassy Knoll shooter. Isn't there a possibility of there's a guy on the overpass too or something?
You know, if you believe all the theories, this place was covered with snipers.
I thought about writing a book once where I accept all the conspiracy theories, and all the conspirators showed up at the same time, and there were shots coming from all directions.
Write that book, please. That'd be the best book ever. Yeah.
I would buy that book.
Right.
Yeah. And one of my favorites is that Woody Harrelson's dad was a contract killer.
And that's true.
And it's true.
That is true.
And he confessed to the Kennedy assassination. I bet you didn't know that.
I sure did not.
Yeah. He was doing life in like a supermax penitentiary for killing a judge. They tried to
Woody
catch
Harrelson's him on a number. Father.
Yes.
Yeah. The actor Woody Harrelson.
Woody Senior.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know what his name is.
I want to say it's Jim or John.
It's something like that. Yeah.
That's crazy. I heard a theory the other day that that the Secret Service agent that was behind the car had been out
had drinking. Had an AR-15.
I hadn't heard that one, but that he'd
it
been out drinking.
Accidentally went off and was the fatal shot.
Yeah. I have heard that.
Yeah.
It was that he had been out drinking the night before and was hungover and was fouling behind the car and he was still half drunk and hungover, and he accidentally shot Kennedy from behind.
Yeah. After the first shot, he pulled out the AR and,
And shot.
I think we should talk about some of the legitimate conspiracy theories, because I was a conspiracy theorist myself for probably 20 years, 30 years, something like that. But the most interesting person, I think, in the whole assassination was a guy named Baron George Demorgenschild. I'm sure I'm tearing up his name, but. And the interesting thing about him was he had lived in Russia, in Minsk, Russia, for a while. He fled. He was Jewish, and he was persecuted. His family was persecuted. Several of them was arrested during the Russian Revolution or shortly thereafter. He went to Austria, opened a ski shop. the Nazis took over Austria. He's a Jew. So he escaped to the United States, lived with his brother in the Hamptons in Long Island, New York. The Hamptons is a very elite neighborhood. One of the neighbors was a beautiful young lady named Janet, who he dated several times, proposed marriage. She turned him down. But Janet was, at the time, was separated from her husband. I forget his first name, but his last name was, is it Bouvier? Is that the way you pronounce it?
Yep.
Okay, Bouvier. And they had a nine-year-old daughter. She had a nine-year-old daughter by the name of Jacqueline. And, of course, that's a Jacqueline Bouvier, who grew up to be, married John F. JFK and became first lady. So here's Oswald's best friend in Dallas, only friend in Dallas, was George de Morgenchild. He and his wife, he had a son who died of cystic fibrosis. They set up the Foundation for Cystic Fibrosis, George, Baron George did, along with his wife. And the honorary president of the foundation was Jacqueline Kennedy. So here's somebody who was really tight with the Kennedys, or fairly tight with the Kennedys, certainly well known by the Kennedys, who was Oswald's best friend in Dallas. Now, and this guy, you know, he had several master's degrees, spoke five languages, he had traveled all over the world, he had been in every business imaginable. And that's your conspiracy right there. I mean, certainly he was somehow involved in this.
Yeah, that is a strange coincidence.
Comes back because he's kind of key in verifying the photo that Oswald had his wife take of him in the backyard.
Is that the Time photo?
Yeah,
the Time magazine.
He's holding up two left-leaning kind of socialist communist
workers in the militant. I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's got the rifle, and he also has the pistol that he'll use to kill Officer Tibbetts on, and he refers to it as the Hunter of Fascists uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So, I can never pronounce the guy's name, but he helps confirm that that's real. They lent a record to Lee Harvey and his wife and then got it back and never looked in it. And that photo autographed was tucked into the record sleeve.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
It's interesting. So because there's two layers of conspiracy here, right? So there's the whole, the logistics and forensics of the actual assassination. Was there one shooter, really, is the big question.
Yes.
That, which you guys naively believe there was one. One shooter, but you know, You know, I don't want to be rude to you. You're our guest. and then the other layer is, okay, even if it was Oswald, that's still...
Then why and who else is...
Right, yeah. It doesn't put the conspiracies to bed.
Right.
No. Because there could still be, you know...
Yeah.
There's LBJ was involved, the FBI was involved, the Secret Service was involved, that dude with the umbrella.
CIA, KGB, any initials you can think of, somebody came out with a book claiming that. So.
And where does Jack Ruby come in to this? Like... That seems like a unique individual to just be coming out of nowhere.
Oh, he was dying, right?
I don't believe he was at the time. He did later die in prison of supposedly natural causes.
Well, Oliver Stone, once again, he says that Jack Ruby.
But I mean, it you know, I'm going to say this, but it seems like, you know, he had to have a reason that he went out there. I mean, it couldn't, you know, was he put up to do it? I mean, why would he do that?
Most of the theories that involve Jack Ruby are that he's connected to the mob.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, he owned some strip joints. He owned some nightclubs. So, obviously, you would know mobsters, but you would also know cops. Mm-hmm. So, he's connected both to Dallas PD and mobsters. But the connections are he knows A, or he A knows B, mm-hmm. therefore he's C. And it's on the surface, it's like, oh, yeah, it makes sense. He knows these mobsters. He had access to get into the police department because he knew all the cops. But, I mean, if you look at it, he's probably just really distraught.
Yeah.
He closed down his bars for 3 days to kind of, you know, in respect. So
you think that he just legitimately was so upset about Kennedy being assassinated and decided to seek out revenge?
That's the overall theory. Now, hear me out here. People who are mentally stable and doing well don't walk around shooting people.
Right, not very often. I happen to do some. I cover some of these things for a living, and you've yet to see anybody just choose as a good idea to go kill somebody.
So you have Oswald, who's operating out of cold blood, and he's not mentally stable, you know, mm-hmm. for a number of reasons. And then you have Ruby, who's acting out of strong emotion,
mm-hmm.
Not necessarily hot blooded, but he's deeply saddened. He feels a great loss. And for whatever reason, he decides to spare Jackie Kennedy a trial, which is what he said.
But is that what he said? See, I've never even really heard what he said, why he did it.
Yeah. But the problem is that he spares America a trial. You know, what we needed was we needed Lee Harvey Oswald on the witness stand, letting a little of that crazy shine through.
Right. And explain the bigger question, why the hell did he kill Kennedy?
Yeah.
Which, you know, we learn a lot about that from Stephen King's book, 11/22/63. I mean, he really lays everything out there, and they actually travel back in time, and they follow Oswald for years.
All right, so
I Bob's research has been entirely
Bob.
How can you beat time travel for a research tool?
I'm just telling you. Last week at the Illuminati luncheon, we were talking about all this, and that is entirely wrong. Entirely wrong.
But no, I didn't know that he said he was that he wanted to spare. If you like that, all of a sudden starts to make sense to me. If you got a guy that is like just loves the president,
and he did.
Yeah.
Kennedy was hugely popular, and that's the thing is we have this irony that he was barely elected, but man, there is something in Kennedy that everybody likes.
Mm-hmm.
If
our former president Donald Trump, everybody can find something to like about the guy.
Yeah. Well, Kennedy was anti-communist.
God, no, everybody's going to let that go like that. Was serious.
I didn't even hear what you said because I was thinking about what I was going to say. So.
God. And, I tried to make a funny and it didn't land.
It happens.
It's too soon.
Too soon.
Right. Yeah. So if you're conservative, you like Kennedy that he's anti-communist. You like that he lowered taxes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're liberal, you like his vision. You know, the whole New Frontier vision is fantastic.
Right.
And his record on civil rights.
Exactly.
And,
yeah. He is an inspiring character. Now, he has his flaws, which were not widely known, but...
All the ladies he was banging around with.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
But, there's a little something to Kennedy that everybody likes.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a loss to the nation, and people were distraught.
Right. And Ruby, I really never really thought about like that, how much probably less of a conspiracy this would have been had Ruby not done what he did.
Well, it's interesting. James Earl Ray takes a plea in the MLK assassination, never goes on the witness stand.
Uh-huh.
Now he can go back and say, well, I took this plea, but there's a conspiracy. And people are like, oh, conspiracy. Sirhan the prosecutors in California, they're like, no, we ain't taking a plea. You're going on the stand exactly for that reason. And there's no conspiracy around RFK.
Right.
It's like, this guy took the stand. We realized he was nuts.
Right.
And he did it.
And that's why he did it.
Yeah.
Well, part of the thing with Ruby, too, was he was kind of just in the right place at the right time, the way that it kind of laid out.
Exactly. You would need... It would take many rehearsals to get him from the Western Union station to the basement of the where he shot Oswald in the, I don't know, 2 minutes or something that's required. I've looked at that distance and never stepped it off, but it's, I don't know, maybe 2 football fields, something like that away. Western Union, he was sending $25 cash to one of his strippers. And it's time stamped in Western Union's, you know, it's tied to the national standard on time. So it's absolutely unquestionable that they know exactly when he sent the wire. Then what was it, 90 seconds or something later, he's in the basement of the building, and he shoots Oswald, which is on film, and the TV stations are absolutely on time. I mean, they can pin it down to the second.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lucky to walk that distance in the time involved. I mean, if you're going to kill a man, if the mob has hired you to kill a man, you don't wait in line at the Western Union station with 1 minute to go before they transfer Oswald. The other thing was the Oswald transfer took place an hour or more after they had announced that it was going to take place. It was delayed because I think it was a postal inspector, wanted to question Oswald further. That delayed it by, I don't know, some length of time, maybe an hour. Then Oswald... before he went down, he was in a t-shirt, and they wanted him dressed more appropriately. So they went up, got his sweater, brought it down. He put it on. You know, that delayed it for a couple of minutes. Had he not asked for the sweater, or if the postal inspector had not wanted to further question him, he would have been gone before Ruby ever got there. So
literally happenstance. It's an emotional reaction. He's just walking by. Oh my God, that's the guy that shot Kennedy. Pulls his gun out and shoots him.
Yeah,
that's yes. Yeah.
I'm assuming just because what he did for a living and your cash business, he probably carried a gun.
He did.
Well, yes. I think we have to assume that he did. He shot him with a gun.
Well, so. But I mean, you know, here's a guy that was probably everyday carrying though.
Right.
Exactly.
He just didn't have it on him. Just to. And let's not forget this happened in Texas.
Yes.
Where everyone has a gun.
Yeah.
Well, and I think another thing that helps prove that too is from my understanding, he had basically a prize dog. He was very fond of this dog he had.
Sheba. Yes.
And he had left the dog in the vehicle to do this.
That's
now,
right.
Think if it's his prized possession, this baby of his, you wouldn't leave it knowing that this is going
to
happen.
Yeah, in front of a bunch of cops where you're obviously not going back to your car afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we're right about the point where we need to
I got
wrap
one
this up.
Last thing.
And Zach's just not going to have time to get to his point.
Nope.
Because I decided that the show's...
not even a point for me. So... So this is something that I think you could have a good grasp of, and I think it would be interesting to hear because the three of us have really no idea about this. The day that happened, like what were your emotions going through that, like personally?
Shock, tragedy, disbelief at first. I think the impact of it was probably you're familiar. I think all of you were. Alive at 911. The impact was similar to that. I mean, the circumstances were totally different, of course, but the impact on America was kind of like that. Most people had heard of Lincoln being assassinated. Very few know that Garfield and McKinley was also assassinated. So, you know, assassinating president is really not that unusual. Four out of 35, I think Kennedy was 35th president, I believe. That's a pretty high percentage. And since then, you know, all the other people that have been assassinated, we shouldn't have been shocked and surprised, but it had been a long, long time before this had happened, and everybody was shocked, surprised. And the real shock came Sunday at 11:30 when broadcast over national TV was Jack Ruby shooting shooting Oswald. Just incredible. It's hard to believe. I went through many, many emotions. As I say, I came full circle from believing conspiracy to believing the Warren Commission to the 30 years of being a huge skeptic of the Warren Commission. But then gradually, at least in my mind, verifying just about everything the Warren Commission claimed. So I'm back. Back to the beginning.
Crazy man, lone gunman, right. And crazy distraught guy kills the lone gunman.
You know, chapter 7 of the Warren Report is all about Oswald's background and issues he had, social, emotional.
Mm-hmm.
It's good reading.
Keep in mind that Oswald had attempted to kill Edwin Walker, failed.
Yes. Right,
one
right,
thing
right.
We forgot to talk
he
about.
He had killed
Stephen King. Covered that in depth in his book.
Yeah, even most skeptics will admit that. Yeah, okay, yeah, he killed, or he tried to kill Edwin Walker. He certainly killed Tippit. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. I'm not sure anybody can question that, although some of the skeptics do.
One of the things that I question, though, is that, you know, this is Texas in the 60s. He killed a cop. He's getting the electric chair.
Right.
At that point in time, why not say, yeah, I shot Kennedy, too?
Right.
That's the only thing that makes me scratch my head, because he was going to the electric chair for killing the cop.
Right. And it still was denying and saying that he was a patsy.
Yeah.
Do either of you, last question before we wrap this up, do either of you think that there could have been, that Oswald could have actually been a patsy? Not so much that he didn't fire the shots, but that he was manipulated into that position.
Okay, well, it's funny that a lot of the conspirators...
It's a yes or no question, Doug. I'm joking.
A lot of the conspirators believe Oswald when he says, you know, I'm a patsy. And yet, they don't believe, you know, the Warren Commission, you know, Earl Warren, Gerald Ford, these people, they all conspired to cover this up.
Right.
Now, who do you believe? Do you believe Oswald, who had every reason to lie, or the Warren Commission, who had no reason to lie?
Right. So you think it was just him acting alone?
That was the conclusion I finally came to, yes.
In addition to the Warren Commission, you know, if the CIA is involved, there was the Church Committee of the U.S. Senate that occurs in 1975. Senator Frank Church of Idaho was no friend of the intelligence community.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he revealed at that point in time, that, like, the MK Ultra experiments with LSD on people and a lot of other, you know, the secrets of the CIA. I don't think Church would have had one problem exposing the CIA if the CIA was involved.
Right.
So, all right. So is he then like a Manchurian candidate from Russia? You know, maybe we find that out at the fall of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the Soviets were kind of good at keeping some secrets.
Right.
Would this have been one of them? I don't know.
Well, so, I mean, it's possible that the, you know, the Russians wanted to, they didn't like what happened in the election, so they were meddling and...
You know, that's could be.
The Russians also tried.
0-2.
I got that one.
Yeah, it's too soon.
The Russians also tried to get rid of Oswald. I mean, get him out of the country for the first couple of months he was there, and finally he attempted suicide, and they realized the publicity would be horrible. So finally, they let him stay.
Which does bring us back to another interesting. When Oswald's wife heard they arrested him, she thought maybe he was trying to kill Connally. Connally was the Secretary of the Navy, and when Oswald, he leaves the Marine Corps, goes to the Marine Corps Reserves, when he defects to Russia, he gets a less than honorable discharge. I can't remember what the exact terminology was. That upset him. And he wrote a letter to Connally asking for it to be reversed. Connally at that point in time was quitting to run for governor, so he sent a letter back and said, well, I'll forward your information to my successor, but I'm not going to take any action on it.
So there's theories that he might have been after Connally and not Kennedy.
But you
him was a bad shot.
Yeah.
Right. But well, they completely missed the first one.
Yeah. But, you know, it would be easier to shoot Connally without Kennedy. You lose all the Secret Service detail.
Right.
So if you're going to shoot Connally, why would you wait till he's with Kennedy?
The other big question was, the motorcade came down, I think the name of the street is Houston, and made a turn onto Elm. Coming down Houston, you got a perfect shot at JFK.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's sitting up above Connally.
Right.
He got a perfect shot at him, and yet he didn't fire then. He waited until they had made the turn, and you know, the question is, why didn't he shoot him? And my theory is, and I've stood in not in that window, but the window one floor up, and my conclusion is that he would have had to expose himself in order to do that. Now, he had already exposed himself to some extent. I mean, Howard Breman was on the ground a block away and saw Oswald with the rifle, or saw someone with the rifle in the window. A few seconds before the shot was fired. At the lineup, he refused to identify Oswald as the man, but because he felt conspiracy, he didn't want his family killed and so forth. So, but later in life, he did admit that, oh, it was Oswald, no question about it, no question in my mind that that it was Oswald, even though I didn't say that at the lineup.
So all the sex appeal of the conspiracy surrounding the Kennedy assassination have been stripped away by you two.
Sorry.
Ruined my Sunday afternoon. But no, actually, I mean, in all reality, it's been really interesting to hear it all broken down, you know, logically and with science and things like that. I still think you guys should check out that 11/22/63 Stephen King, because, you know, he was there. Time travel. He was right there when it happened.
I've never read that. I'll have to read that.
It's a good one. It's also been made into a TV show on Hulu. It's very good. But Tom, Doug, thank you guys both very much. We really appreciate you coming in and
thank you for
educating us a little bit.
Thank you.
Zach, thanks for being my friend.
Love you, buddy.
Love you too, man. Love you guys. We'll see you next week. Actually, no. We won't see you next week. We're off for at least a week.
A week or two.
Or 2 weeks, because then I'm gone and then you're gone. Yeah. So we'll be off for 2 weeks. So we won't see. We'll see you around, I don't know, Thanksgiving.
Love you guys. There.
Bye. I have to admit that Doug and Tom really took the wind out of my sails. For decades, I've always been certain that there were at least two gunmen. But after recording this episode, I went ahead and watched the Nova documentary that the guys kept referring to. It can be rented for a few bucks on Amazon, by the way, if anyone's interested. And I also did a little more research on my own, and I have to say that I feel like I've been bamboozled by Oliver Stone. Now, I know there are still many of you out there that do not believe that Oswald acted alone. And who knows, you may be right. But in my opinion, the science paints a different picture. It paints a picture where Lee Harvey Oswald fired all three shots and killed John F. Kennedy. Two things have me convinced. One is a frame-by-frame look at the Zapruder film. In viewing the final kill shot to Kennedy's head, in each frame you can see the propulsion of flesh projecting from Kennedy's head towards the front of the limo, as you would expect to see with a shot coming from behind. And secondly, and probably more importantly, is the medical evidence. The fracture patterns on JFK's skull clearly indicate an entry wound from the back of his head. And even more convincing is the complete lack of injury to the left lobe of his brain. I believe that a shot from the grassy knoll would, without question, have passed through both lobes. But according to the autopsy, only the right lobe is damaged. Now, as I said, I could be wrong, and Jim Garrison could be right. I'm certainly not an expert, and without a doubt, this is a debate that will continue on for years and years to come. But for me personally, I take some amount of comfort in the belief that our government did not conspire to murder the President of the United States. And I pray that this is a line that will never be crossed. And now, what's next for Truth and Justice? In just 2 days, on this Sunday, we have an episode for you that I think you're going to love. I'm joined by Haley Butler and Tanu Thomas, the hosts of the Orange Tree podcast, to discuss the fascinating case, the murder of Jennifer Cade.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and all music for the show was created and composed by PutThemInASong.com. Our follow-up logo was created by Zach Weaver, and all of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Viola, Edith Swanneck, Lindsay Pease, and Jen Reese Incandela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels. For just $5 per month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes videos of the creation of our Friday follow-up episodes that include 10 to 30 minutes of pre-show bonus chat. Other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter at Truth Justice Pod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Mike can be found at Murb Gaming, MURRBGAMING. And Zach can be found at Z to the Q. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, and tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Mike Bussing.
This has been Truth and Justice.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.